My name is Marion. I'm an alcoholic. You know, I'm so very... First of all, I'd like to say again, thanks to Dick and Barbara. I'm really very grateful to you guys for all that you've done to put us on. Thank you so much. And I would like to say thank you too to my wonderful sponsor, Clancy. You know, this is a program of love. And it's a program of God and love. And that is what I've had from Clancy. I've always had, I truly believe, God's direction through Clancy. He's always led me back to God, and he's always given me the right thing to do. And I am so grateful. I believe in sponsorship. I need some help, my sponsor, more today than I've ever needed them, because I don't want to mess up anymore. And what we never, well, at least what I must never forget, is when it says this is a progressive illness, that's not just about drinking, that's about the mental condition that we have. Because the problem centers in the mind, not the body. And this is progressive. And that is why I have to keep in action. And I have found that the best possible source of emotional stability is God. You know, when I came in here, I had a problem. I had a big problem. It was called Mary. But, you know, I had thrown God away. And, but I believe that God was always following me. There's a wonderful poem called The Hound of Heaven by Francis Thompson. And it's about a man running through life and running through the dregs, running through the places I went when I was living on the street, running through the muck of life. And he was always hearing these steps behind him. And he thought it was a dog that was chasing him. And then he turned around one day at the height of his despair and he found it was God. That God had always been chasing him. And that's how it seemed to be in my life. In my life, God has always seemed to be there for me. And, you know, I am one of those people that are sicker than others. I am one of those people who, even before I drank, I had, what does it say? Those who suffer from grave mental and emotional disorders, but many of them do recover if they have the capacity to be honest. And I am one of those. And I never ever thought that I would be able to live the way I live because I was afraid of everything. I had great fear of everything. And then that turned into aggression. And then that just pushed people away further. And I still lived in fear. And my God has taken away that fear. You know, God... You know, recently there's been... I'm not going to get into specifics, but there are... we honor all people. But there are people now who are actually AA members who want to take God out of the program. They want to have atheist AA groups and agnostic AA groups. And I don't understand that. Because if you be an alcoholic of my type, I was beyond human aid. Nothing could. Everybody had given up on me. There was no doctor, no psychiatrist, no psychiatric medication. Nothing could help me. Until I came in here one day and somebody knelt down and said the third step, and through despair, it cracked me open enough for God's grace to come into my life. You know, somebody was reminding me of a little story. You know, it talks about every morning before we go out, we have to get in fit spiritual condition. And I talked to God all day because I couldn't even get on a plane without God. Because, you know, I used to work with British Airways. I was up in a plane. I hated people. I was claustrophobic. And I was not in good shape. And at that time, I did not have God in my life. You know, and even today, sometimes I need God. But... You know, a little story that somebody just reminded me I told at some conference. It says we should get in fit spiritual condition and talk to God before we go out in the morning. When I went back to Jamaica, 8 years sobriety to make amends to the island. I was back there for 2 years and I was working. And one day I had an early morning appointment in Ocho Rios, Jamaica. So I left Montego Bay in a hurry, and I'm driving along in my little bus that I had, and I'm talking to God, and I'm driving along the seawall, looking at the turquoise sea, and the beautiful sky, and all the beautiful flowers, and all of a sudden I feel a bump, and I see somebody's head in my windscreen. and then they disappear. And I thought, did I really see that? And I stopped the van, and I had hit a tourist driving on the wrong side of the road. He was on the wrong side. He was an American, and in Jamaica we drive on the left-hand side of the road. Now I am back in Jamaica to make amends to the island. I've just hit a tourist. And so the police come, and we get an ambulance for this poor man. He's all bloody, his face is all bloody. I was in terrible fear and shock. And they took him to hospital. They made me go with him to the hospital. And then the inspector wanted to see me in the police station to take my statement. And he said, you know, you have to pay for the tourist to get health care. I said, I'll do that, sir. He said, no, let me tell you, let me just ask you this. What were you doing that you didn't see the tourist? What were you thinking about when you were driving? Were you not paying attention? I said, I was talking to God. He said, you were talking to God. I said, yeah, I didn't have time to do my prayers before I left. And he leant over and he held my hand and he said, Miss Mary, I'm going to ask you something. Can you please talk to God before you hit the street? And that's what it is all about. You know, it says in our big book that this is a design for living that really works. And this is what I needed. I never knew I needed this. All I knew was this seeming inability to handle life from a very early age. This seeming inability to form a true partnership with another human being. This seeming inability to accept much on faith. My grandparents had great faith. My mother had great faith. I didn't. I did not have that. And I didn't have any ease and comfort in my life because my skin didn't fit. Until I took a drink at age 25. And then I drank till I was 40. And in those 15 years, I had lost everything in my life. There was absolutely nothing left. There was no solution left for me. You see, my solution to the condition I was in before I found alcohol, to that restlessness, that irritability, that discontent, that hopeless, almost emptiness inside, that vacuum I had inside, the answer to that was alcohol. Alcohol was my solution. Alcohol went deep down inside of me like a piece of velvet, and it wrapped itself around every abnormality I had been feeling for 25 years. And it just made me feel all right. Really all right. I didn't drink to get high. I was born high. I was born nervous. I needed something that would calm me down, as Dr. Stokewell said. I just wanted a little bit of shush from what was going on in my mind. And alcohol gave it. And then I had a little normal living until I didn't. And then I found Alcoholics Anonymous, and I found this wonderful God. Some people have said to me, you've left one dependency on alcohol for another dependency on God. I can think of no better dependency, because the thing is this: through an absolute and complete dependence on God, I have discovered absolute and complete independence in my life. That is the beauty of it. I am free, and I thank God. You know, I thank God. You know, if you be an alcoholic of my type, I don't know how you can live without God in your life. And you know, I haven't had panic attacks Well, I had panic attacks when I was 13 until I drank, and then they went away. Has anyone in here had panic attacks? They are totally and utterly isolating. You are totally and completely encased in self, and you can't get out of yourself. And it's a nightmare beyond description. Since I got sober 33 years ago, there's only three or four times in my life that I have ever felt these panic attacks coming on. And I've just guided them away. God, 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 God. And they go before they hardly begin. Bill Wilson said once that Alcoholics Anonymous is not a success story. Rather, it is a chronicle of our colossal human failure, turned to usefulness by the divine alchemy of a loving God. And that's what I was, an absolute and complete failure at everything in life. And I'll just finish with this. As I said about a design for a living that really works. This is, you know, we are the most fortunate people in the world. Alcoholics Anonymous could never have started anywhere but in the United States of America. Do you know that? Because it is only in the United States of America that allowed for a God of your own understanding. So what a gift you have given the world. I think it's amazing. And that God of your own understanding is a magnificent thing. When I was at a conference in Honolulu in 2001, and the conference was called Design for Living, and we all had badges, a Design for Living. And I was on an elevator with some other AA members, and a man came on with two children. They were not members of the conference, and he looked at my badge and he said, "Oh, Design for Living. Are you guys all interior decorators?" And you know, that is what AA does. It's an interior decorator. It's a soul surgery that takes away the things that we don't need anymore, the things that were blocking us from God's grace. So I am just so very, very grateful to be with these two wise men. And I'm so looking forward to hearing what they said. Dick and Barbara, thank you for having me here. Thank you, Lee, again, for all you do. And thank you for being a member of this great fellowship that I just am so blessed to be a part of. Thank you.
Thank you, Mary. And hi, everybody. My name's Don Major, and I'm an alcoholic. And what an honor to be sandwiched between two of my absolute icons, Mary and Clancy. I am a little concerned about Clancy having the rebuttal, though. I don't know about that part. But and this morning, I neglected to thank the committee and Dick and Barbara for all the work that they've put in to make this possible. So thank you all. It's such an honor to be here. And, you know, I got sober after having lost everything. I didn't think that I would ever be able to work a minimum wage job again. The great miracle started happening in my life, and the folks led me through the first nine steps of AA. Got it through my head finally that the third step was an action, and it was a very simple thing, that it wasn't turning my overall will in life over to God, but rather simply making a decision to start walking in that direction by doing the rest of the steps and trying to do that next right thing instead of what I wanted to. Then I did a fourth, fifth step. And I formed a picture of what a spiritual Don Major ought to look like. And I went home and did just precisely what the book said. I didn't have a shelf, so I couldn't get it off the shelf. But I got the big book, and I spent an hour going over the first five steps. And it looked like to me I'd done a passable job. And I got down on my knees, and I looked at it and said, "Well, I think I'm ready here on step six." And I said the seventh step prayer. and got up and went to work on my eighth and ninth step. And I believe the six and seven were where, with God's help, I went to work on me, make me into what I had decided a spiritual Don ought to be. And then I proceeded it until I was sober 9 years to believe that not only was okay, that it was the only responsible way to be. And the first 9 years of my sobriety, based on where I came from, were absolutely enchanted. My law license got put back in order. I discovered that the forgiveness of non-alcoholics thus passes all understanding. The daughter, who was my only child at that time, that I had not seen for over 3 years, wound up moving in with me and lived with me all through her high school years, and she and I are dear friends today. And I began to, by God incidents, Don Pritz got snowed in back in February of 1983. And he was supposed to speak in front of 2,000 people at the Kentucky State Convention, so they stuck me up there at 22 months sober. And I thought that was awful, but as my judgment on events in my life usually is, it's 180 degrees off. That started a wonderful chain of events, and people began to say, "Hey, Don, will you do this in AA? Will you speak here? Will you do this? Will you be my sponsor?" And started making some money practicing law. And the first 9 years of my sobriety were just enchanted, except relationships with the ladies and financial chaos like to have killed me. And I worked so hard on that, and I had the best of intentions, and the tools I was using were prayers, steps, sponsors, outside counseling from time to try, just anything, desperately. And whatever character defect was making me uncomfortable and embarrassing me, I would grab that sucker figuratively by the collar, and I'd slam it up against the wall using all those tools and say, "Come here, God, just give me a little help, and we'll get rid of this thing." And God never came. And then something happened in May of 1990 that caused me to look at the seventh step, sixth and seventh step, a different way. It allowed me to really see what the ink on the paper said. I could have quoted that step to you backwards if you'd given me 5 minutes and sat down with me. But there's a whole lot of difference in knowing and realizing. And I didn't realize that it really doesn't ask God to remove all my defects of character, and it certainly does not ask God to remove the ones that are making my self-centered butt uncomfortable. It asks God to remove only those that stand in the way of my usefulness to God and my fellows. And for the last 27 years plus, six and seven have been the most important steps in my life. And that reality that I don't know, my problem with perfection isn't my inability to attain it. I am unable to attain it, but that doesn't matter. My problem with perfection is far deeper than that. I can't recognize it. I have no idea. If God came down right now, and I'm going to be 74 this month, been sober 36 years, and said, "Okay, Don, let's just set it all aside and simplify here. Tell me who and what you ought to be, and I'll make you that immediately." I'd be like a blind dog in a butcher shop. I'd have no idea who and what I ought to be. And the character defects that so lingered so long and painfully in sobriety for me, embarrassingly, there's no way going through that I could see that there would ever be any redeeming qualities about that. And those have wound up being the reason, I'd say three-fourths of the time, that my telephone rings and says, "Don, can you help with this? Can I talk to you about that? Will you do this?" I never know where God's taking me. And it turns out that idea, that it's not about me, it's not about, you know, praying for a character defect to be gone because I want it gone, is exactly the same spiritual mistake as praying for a Ferrari. The book says that praying for our own selfish ends won't work. You can easily see why. Well, it took me 9 years sober to begin to easily see why it doesn't work with regard to my character defects. But it's not just 6 and 7. It's the heart of the program. The absolute heart of it. You know, we hear, don't hear as much as we used to, but used to hear all the time, you know, AA is a selfish program. Well, I understand why people say that. And they're trying to make a valid point. They're trying to make the valid point that if I don't take care of my sobriety and stay sober, then I'm no good to myself or anybody else. So I do have to kind of put that as my highest priority. But the fact is, I've got a selfish illness. At the heart of my illness is this ego disorder that makes me so self-centered. And self is my problem. I mean, it's throughout the big book. It's there that self is the problem, and that's what's going to kill me. Selfishness and self-centeredness. That, we think, is the root of our troubles. And the third step prayer. Take away my difficulties so that victory over them, not so I can be happy and spiritual and sober. Take away my difficulties that victory over them will bear witness to those I would help of God's power, love, and way of life. Eighth and ninth step, really practical, all about taking care of our lives and setting it in order and making our amends. Yeah, but if you look on page 77, it says, yeah, we're doing that. But that's not our real purpose. Our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God and those around us. And I have found that trying to keep that at the forefront of my life has been, it's been life-changing. I've learned all sorts of things. Chuck Chamberlain, who was one of Clancy's sponsors, I never met, unfortunately. But he is absolutely one of my class A heroes. And Chuck said things like that he doesn't need to worry so much about taking care of himself, that he needs to worry about helping God's kids do what they need to have done for fun and for free because he wants to. And if he does his job of taking care of God's kids, God never fails to take care of him. And I found that to be true. And the prayer of St. Francis, particularly the part, and that's on page 99 of the 12 and 12, so I count it as an 11th step prayer, particularly the part of praying to seek to love, comfort, and understand rather than to be loved, comforted, and understood, that has been absolute magic in my life, absolute magic in my human relations. When I have remembered to run that through my head before and during my human encounters, I swear I've never had one go terribly. They haven't all gone to suit me, but I've never had one go completely off the rails. And I've learned that if any part of me in any of my human encounters is trying to get you to love, comfort, and understand me, and unfortunately, that includes things like making sure you respect me. It includes things like making sure you don't trample on my rights, by God. If any part of me is coming from there, I've learned that at least for me, it's an absolute spiritual law that I will not feel loved, comforted, and understood to my satisfaction. It cannot happen. If I'm trying to get you to do that and you do exactly what I thought I wanted you to do, before you're done, I'll change it. It just can't happen. The only time it's possible for me to feel loved, comforted, and understood to my satisfaction is when I'm praying that prayer over and over and over before and during my encounters with people until finally, for just a little while, miracles happen. For just an instant, you become more important to me than I am. For just a little while, I become a true listener. I'm not thinking about what I'm going to say next and how it's going to sound. I'm not thinking about four or five unrelated things on different tracks. I've done what Chuck suggested. I've been able, through that prayer, to give you my entire interest, attention, and love. And although you may have seemed awful dull to me going in, you will have become for that moment the most interesting thing on earth. Anything that I give my entire interest, attention, and love to. Chuck said, even if it's just shaving, but whatever it is, and whoever it is, it will become the most interesting thing in the world. And I've learned that the same spiritual paradox, really, is if I ask myself the question, what am I getting out of this? And I'm talking about with regard to anything. My work, AA, my marriage, my children, my friendships, anything. If I ask, well, what am I getting out of this? And I study about it for about 20 seconds. The answer is going to be some form of not enough. So it's just the wrong question. It's just the wrong question for me. The right question for me is always, what can I bring to this? And when I can truly come at it from that angle of approach, when I can come at whatever it is, not from how's it going to be for me? How's this going to play for Don? But what can I give to someone here? And it doesn't really matter if I get loved, comforted, and understood. I'm not here to take. I'm here to try to give. The paradox is that I get more out of it than I could ever possibly imagine. And when I truly am, when I can get to the point that I truly am trying to love, comfort, and understand you, and laying aside whether I get that, one of the benefits, one of the things that happens, is I wind up loved, comforted, and understood beyond my wildest dreams. Of course, I like that when it happens, so I try to hold on to it, and poof, it's all gone, and I got to start all over again. And that's wonderful, because starting over again in persistence is what it's all about for me. I was giving a talk one time, and it flew out of my mouth. I've been in the fourth dimension of existence 5,000 times. And it hit me, and I said, oh, my God, that means I've fallen out of it 4,999. And that's fine. I'm not capable of perfection. What I'm capable of is stumbling a couple of steps in the right direction, getting knocked over by some form of self, getting up, dusting myself off and saying, oops, Mom, Dad, I'm sorry, I fouled up again. Stumbling another couple of steps in the right direction and getting knocked over again. And sometimes, folks, that process happens to me 50 to 100 times a day. And when I first began to be aware of spirituality, I thought every time that happened, it was an interruption of my spiritual growth. But what I found out is that that process is the only spiritual growth of which I'm capable. And apparently my God is just fine with that. My God doesn't require perfection from me, doesn't even really require consistency. My God seems to be tickled to death with just the persistence. And finally, in my work, and this is going right back again to my hero, Chuck, but when I go down to that law office and I try really in good faith to work hard, do a good job, protect myself, protect my client, make money, win cases, I wind up in the snake pit every single time. Every single time. Because I'm down there trying to look out after me. And I wind up trying to outthink, outperform, and outmaneuver. And I've discovered God is a whole lot better lawyer than I am. And I've discovered that the loudest sound in the world, in or out of a courtroom, is the quiet, loving truth. And when I go down there and instead of trying to do all those things, I really am trying to help God's kids do what they need to have done for fun and for free because I want to, I succeed beyond my wildest dreams. I love you all, and I thank you so much for letting me be here, and I'm going to turn it over to the cleanup hitter.
My name is Clancy Emmersland, and I'm an alcoholic. Would you hand me that book just a second? I'm going to talk very short tonight. You can all be asleep by the time I'm done. But I very much enjoyed what my two colleagues here had to say. Marie talked a lot about her experience and her feelings, and the lawyer talked about lawyer talk, but I guess. But I wanted to say a few words to the young man who got the book tonight, that new guy, because I think that you reminded me of me. You want to do the right thing, but you don't want to hang around here and do it. And I understand that. I had a terrible time because it seemed to me that what they required of me is that I achieve such perfection that I couldn't do that because I was too fallible. Some of the greatest literature I know is in this book, Alcoholics Anonymous. There's one section in it that's saved my bacon. I remember reading it and think, boy, that's right. That gives me a chance. It says, no one among us has been anything like perfect in the practice of these principles. We are not saints. The point that we grow along spiritual lines, we do not achieve perfection. And you can be very fallible and be a good member of AA and a growing member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And the one other thing, I'm not much of a book quoter. I like to listen to it, but I don't like to. But the one thing that I always think about is so good for new people who are afraid and lonely. Somewhere in here. Here it is. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to me. Ask him in your morning meditation, if you think about doing a morning meditation, both of these folks do, and it's a good way to start your day. That has to be some long classical thing. In your morning meditation, what you could do for the men who still suffer. You may say, but I will not have the benefit of contact with you when you write this book. I would like to say one thing to the young man. I hope that you will get a sponsor. A sponsor is someone who, Dr. Bob, in his last talk when he was dying, he was the co-founder of AA. He said, none of us would be here today if someone hadn't taken the time to explain things to us, to take us to a few meetings. Let us never reach that stage of smug complacency where we are too busy to help our friend who still suffers in the blackness of alcoholic despair. So, as I said, you may say, but I will not have the benefit of contact with you who write this book, because when that was written, there were very few alcoholics sober. There were just a couple here and there, and they didn't know who they'd ever see again. God will determine that. So you must remember that you, your real audience, is always, your guidance is always upon him. He will show you how to create the fellowship you crave. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to me. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can still do each day for the man who still suffers. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is is right, and great events will come to you, past and for countless others. And to you, young man, whoever you are, remember, they a great many people in AA, for the best of reasons, best of intentions, tell you to get close to God. I could not do that. In fact, there was a man in the original group of alcoholics who got together, clung together sober, who had a job. He was on the road selling things, and he'd get drunk every time he got on the road. He came back and he said, "Bill, I just can't accept God. All the God you got is just, I'm afraid of God." So maybe we can help you. So they added, "As you understand him." It came from someone's failure. "As you understand him." That's what's nice about AA. God is as you understand him. You can't say you don't believe in it, because you do believe in it. Everybody believes in something. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. That is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself, God, to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. One of the great problems I had in my life, one of the greatest problems, I happened to be in jail when my son died, and I carried that terrible curse with me for years. Whenever I wanted to get drunk, all I had to do was think about that for a couple hours. And give free eventually went away, because I did the things that people told, my sponsor told me to do. And I had to accept my sponsor as my higher power, and he saved my life thereby. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you unto then. And all of our hearts are with you. We seem, everybody in the room seems to be kind of slicker than you are and doing better. And they've been sober for long periods of time. But I always seem to identify with the frightened person who is coming in and knows the words but does not know the music. And you stay till you know the music, and it'll be wonderful. And God bless you. God bless my friends. God bless all of you. Thank you.
We'll close.